Alemán.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. I am so pleased to welcome you to the inaugural episode, the long-awaited debut of Foul Territory.
Hooray!
A sports talk radio show. My name is Asa Beal, and I would like to introduce my co-host, Travis Jones.
That's very kind of you, Asa. Hello, everybody. This is Travis Jones, live from Atlanta, Georgia, in my sports studio. And you know what? Tonight, I got my sports shorts on, and I'm ready to jump in the raging sea of judgment. I'm excited. I'm excited to get real deep into some MLB baseball. Maybe talk about some small market teams that don't get some coverage on ESPN. Maybe get a little deep inside the NBA draft, which is going on tomorrow. We got a lot of big sports things going on. So I'm very excited about tonight, and I'm going to kick it back to, you heard him first, Asa Beal.
Yes. So I've been wanting to do a radio show for some time now, and just to talk for 1 minute to some of the people out there and tell you about why we decided to do this. And I guess, you know, it all comes down to the name, which is Foul Territory, and obviously a baseball term. But also a little bit in reference to, you know, how the show's going to go. And we like to keep things fun, but at the same time, we might get a little heated. You know, we might have to just speak our minds. We're going to be offering some unabridged opinions, and we're not going to apologize for them. Profanity, sadly, is not avoidable. Parental consent is advised.
Think of this as sports radio after dark. Where I am, it's dark. Where you are, it's probably not, but that's okay.
It's actually light where I am. Another brief point I wanted to make before we really get into the meat and the potatoes is we're going to really try to talk about what we know. I know a lot about baseball, and so does Travis. We both, you know a lot about football and basketball, and so we're just going to try and talk about what we know, and if we don't cover the sport that you're into, it's probably because you didn't want to hear us talk about it anyway. But what's going to happen is we're going to bring on a lot of experts in the particular sport that we're talking about. We're going to have guests on every week. You know, so if we don't know about a particular sport, we're going to have somebody on to give it some serious credibility. One plug I'd like to give is we always want to improve. So hit us on Twitter, either at @foul_territory or at Asa Base on Balls, or
you can find me at @Travis_Pones for all you non-nerds out there. That's spelled PWNS. That's some wordplay.
Exactly. So we'd like to start with a light segment that will be on every show, and we'll always be accepting anybody's recommendations for this. You can always tweet at us, and this one is a little thing we like to call Tweet Child of Mine.
Whoa, 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 tweet child of mine.
That was beautiful. I didn't know we actually had the recording for that that song yet, but I guess we do. The IT guys have been working overtime for us. So, Travis, why don't you get us started on this week's episode of Tweet Child of Mine?
So, my first tweet and my only tweet. It's recently we quit team trivia, which is disappointing. So we can't get Team Sandusky started now. But that's okay, because in a few years, it'll be a great deep cut. Hashtag get it, hashtag puns are fun. Thought that would be appropriate for the first episode of Foul Territory.
Now, for those of our guests that don't know us personally as people, the countless thousands of you out there, you know, we're going to push the boundaries a little bit, and that just might happen. My tweet comes from a guy that I love dearly, and his name's Rob Delaney. A lot of you probably are familiar with his work. And he was responding to at Baskin Robbins, which, you know, everyone knows is always trying to get out there and really, you know, interact with their fans, kind of get the vibe, what the young people are thinking. And so Baskin Robbins.
A lot of people talking about ice cream. A lot of people talking about ice cream.
So Baskin Robbins asked, what's the first thing on your summer to-do list? And Rob Delaney, never wanted to pass up a juicy question like that, replied, frame Bradley Cooper for my cousin's murder. Which I thought was appropriate because I too would frame Bradley Cooper for something. You know, not that I have anything to frame him for, but I think he'd be frameable, definitely.
He's a beautiful man, but he has the eyes of a serial killer.
He does. They look right through you, and although he might be able to charm some unknowing police officer. Well,
that's all.
Let's get to sports, because that's what the people are here for. And the first topic of the night is the most topical topic of the night, because tomorrow night, David Stern is going to wiggle his little butt up on that stage about 60 times. Yes, that's right. It's time for the NBA draft. Which
always an exciting time of year to see all the college kids go in to shape new NBA franchises. I always love the draft in any sport. It's harder to get into in Major League Baseball, unfortunately. But NBA draft, NFL draft, always a huge amount of fun.
And, Travis, we were talking about this earlier, but part of the reason that baseball, you know, it's harder to get into it is because even the best players in baseball are expected to take at least a couple years to develop.
Yeah.
Basketball, on the other hand, is much different. You know, a guy who's taken in the first round or the top of the first round is almost always going to be starting on his team and maybe even asked to carry his team coming into the league with, you know, 1, 2, or very rarely 4 years of college. So,
right. Just look at Kyrie Irving last year.
Exactly. Exactly. The Cavs thought that they were done. You know, they were so sad and they would never recover from losing LeBron, and turns out they nabbed themselves a franchise player in Kyrie Irving. So everybody knows. Well, first of all, let's get to a few items from the day. The Rockets have been busy lately. Have they not, Travis?
They have been busy. The Rockets traded Samuel Dalembert, who is a very serviceable veteran and NBA center, and a few others to move up from 14 to 12. Also recently traded Chase Budinger.
Chase Budinger. And so Dalembert, he was older. I mean, he's getting older, if I remember. Why are they restocking right now? What are they trying to put together right now?
Well, a lot of the rumors I've been hearing, one of the first ones was they were trying to make a deal for Josh Smith, but now as more reports have come out, and I'm sure that the Hawks fans wouldn't be too terribly disappointed to see Josh Smith go, since he's had such a love-hate relationship in Atlanta.
Sure.
But as more and more reports have come in, there have been rumors of possibly Houston trying to get enough resources, get enough assets together to make a trade for Dwight Howard, to make a push, and then hopefully they can bring in Deron Williams and maybe sign both guys into the future. So it's looking like Houston might come into this whole thing late. Not a whole lot of talk about the Rockets, and all of a sudden they might be making some power moves right before the draft.
It certainly sounds that way. It is a bold move, because everybody knows that Dwight Howard totally botched his whole year last year and ended up having to sign a one-year deal with Orlando just to kind of save face. So everybody expects him to be on the move, but it's like the biggest soap opera. I guess the NBA has a soap opera every year. The biggest one since the last one.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
and, yeah, I feel like the way that he handled that, I mean, at this point, everyone knows you're going to leave. I don't even know why you signed the one-year deal in the future. Just make it a clean break, and let's go ahead and move on with this whole thing. Let's move on from Dwight Howard and on to, you know, the NBA itself.
Yeah. The teeming hundreds of Orlando fans are heartbroken. I doubt it not.
Right.
But the draft is tomorrow, like we said. There's been a little bit of movement. None of the top picks have been swapped yet, but there's been a lot of talk about the two pick potentially being traded. Everybody's talking about the two pick because everybody knows where the one pick is going, and that's Anthony Davis. Everybody knows it. It's pretty much a consensus that he's a once-in-a-generation player. I mean, you do hear this a lot. Every year someone will be talked about that way, but – you know, and then there are years where you hear, oh, you hear this a lot, but this guy is even better than all those guys. So, you know, take from it what you will. I'm sure everybody watched him, you know, throughout the tournament and throughout the college basketball season and saw how he dominated. You know, the NBA is a different animal, and he is a very skinny guy. But, you know, everybody puts on pounds, and Kevin Durant did all right being that skinny. But
yeah, exactly. You figure he'll be able to tack on some mass and be a beast down low. And I mean, the fact that he was able to thrive in Kentucky with so many other superstars on the team, he's just able to affect the game in so many different ways. I mean, everyone knows about his ability to block shots. I think he set a record in the tournament. Yeah, I mean, the kid's ridiculous and he's legit. And after him, it really all is just kind of a mixed bag. And like you said, I think that there might be a lot of trades, some people moving around trying to see or just trying to fit what their needs are. So I would have to propose to you, Asa Beal, if you were a team that was able to get in possession of the number two overall pick, who would you take?
Well, some people might claim bias here because we are related, however distantly. But Bradley Beal out of Florida is an animal. And I feel like he's one of those guys who his college career is so not the reflection of what he's going to be as a pro for a couple different reasons. You know, people have talked a lot about how at Florida they had a pretty junky thrown together team this year. And he is normally, you know, he would be a two guard in the NBA, but had to play the three, even had to play the four, and really did well at those positions. Didn't put up the shooting numbers that you would have expected. You know, everybody's dropping these Ray Allen comparisons, which is a pretty lofty place to go
right.
In terms of a shooting stroke. But he's, I mean, that's not the kind of player he is. I think Eric Gordon is a more comparable thing there in that he can get to the basket, but he does have an outside game too. And
like
he's a big boy. Sorry?
I said I like that comparison.
Yeah, I mean, it's not original by any means. But he, because he had to play the three and the four, he was the leading rebounder in the SEC. And one of the leading rebounding guards in the country. I guess he technically was a guard. But, you know, I think he brings – there just aren't that many good twos out there anymore. Like, I feel like, you know, there's so many good point guards, but the, you know, the generation of the twos, it seemed like, was a couple of years ago, you know, when Kobe was in his prime and McGrady. And now I feel, you know, after – there's obviously some dominant players at the top there, but – it drops off relatively quickly. You know, when Eric Gordon's like a shoe-in for a top five at a position in the NBA, feels like a weak position. So that's my choice, Beal. What about you?
Well, a lot of the mock drafts that I've been checking out have had Thomas Robinson second overall, and I think that's fine. I think that he, you know, he did a good job at Kansas, carried that team to the finals, but he's not overly huge. He's 6'9", he's 244. His athleticism doesn't really jump out at me. He's not much of a shooter. I think he got by in college because he is pretty big and he just worked his butt off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how good he's going to be at the next level. And I think if you're Charlotte at number two, you have to just take highest ceiling. So who I think the highest ceiling is going to be is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Kid's a beast. He can affect the game in more than just scoring. I kind of see him as more of a maybe an Andre Iguodala. He's 18 years old. He's 6'7". He can do a little bit of everything. And I feel like he has some of the highest ceilings of anyone else in the draft, but I could comfortably take about five guys with the number two pick and make an argument for him, honestly. It's just such a toss-up after Anthony Davis.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And there will be some moving if we're to believe what's happening. It sounds like Cleveland and Washington both want Beal. Obviously, Washington has the upper hand being in the third spot, and Cleveland's in the fourth spot. However, conceivably, either one could trade up to number two. So the Wizards might end up having to give up a fair amount of assets to trade up to number two from number three just to prevent the Cavs from doing that, which is kind of an interesting thing. This shows, you know, how quickly you can build an NBA team, because you see all these teams down here, you know, and they're made up of a lot of not desirable assets. You know, a lot of these teams, maybe one or two guys would play, you know, on a playoff team's roster. But it's more important to have, you know, a few of those building blocks for the future. Then you can throw them together with a few free agents and make a run. And New Orleans obviously is getting Anthony Davis. They already have the aforementioned Eric Gordon in place at the two guard, which is a pretty solid 1-2. And they also have the number 10 pick. And this is, I guess, considered a pretty strong draft compared to recent years. So it's not a bad place to be either.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know what? Someone I'd look at who I think is getting a little bit underrated of that 10 pick, if I'm the Hornets, is Tyler Zeller. He's a legit 7 feet tall, dominated last year in college. And I think in today's NBA or in any NBA, it's hard to find a legit 7-footer. But yeah, you're right. I mean, with those two top 10 picks and maybe the signing of one free agent, the Hornets could go from the worst team in the league to, with a little bit of luck and health, to you know, maybe possibly slip in there in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree.
And another team that I look at is Cleveland with the number 4 overall pick. They surprised a lot of people for the first part of last year. Irving, as we said earlier, is a beast. Kyrie is making everything iry in Cleveland. I believe in this kid. I think he's a beast, but he's little, and I hope he can stay healthy. Some of the mock drafts I've seen have been Michael Kidd-Gilchrist at 4, and I think that he would work pretty well as a slasher with Kyrie Irving. I think that would be exciting to watch.
Yeah, I agree. Irving is special because I mean, you know, what did he play, 12 games in college or something? I mean, nobody really knew exactly what he was going to be. They knew he had all this talent, and, you know, you've seen those few game tapes. But he has the special point guard abilities, but also he's a finisher at the end of the game, which is, you know,
right,
what every team is after. And
some big shots last year.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, why not have that guy be your point guard? He's you know, bringing the ball up, just have it in his hands. He can do whatever he wants with it and just kind of, you know, let him run your team, which I guess point guards do in general. But
right. But yeah, like you said, it's hard to find that guy who's really a true point guard, and he's one of them.
Yeah, it is. So we mentioned Cleveland. What are other teams that could potentially make a jump from the lottery to the playoffs, which is not unheard of because so many teams make the playoffs in the NBA, you know, just to be an 8 seed for the right to get creamed, although, you know, a few 8 seed upsets in the last few years. So who are some other teams besides Cleveland?
Well, define the lottery pick for me real quick. What am I working with here?
Oh, I don't know. I guess top 12.
Okay.
10.
Yeah, like you said, I think the Hornets could build pretty quickly. The Bobcats are screwed. I was looking at their lineup today. I looked at their entire depth chart, and as an avid basketball fan, I was hard-pressed to even recognize some of the names. I think that they're a long way away, and unfortunately for them, I don't know if Thomas Robinson is going to be able to put them over the hump. Maybe next year they can get some kind of generational talent. I would say that Washington is interesting. I know that they're kind of a laughable team, but they jettisoned JaVale McGee for Nene, who's a good underrated center. You have John Wall, who, if he has his head on straight, I mean, he's one of the best athletes in the league. He could be one of the better point guards. And if they draft your boy Bradley Beal, I think that they could have a good young core that can maybe make a little bit of noise.
And they also traded for Emeka Okafor, which was a big trade.
That's right. He's a good defensive presence in the middle.
Right. That's a pretty good front line. I mean, him and Nene, that's a lot of rebounds there. You know, that's a lot of lobs for old J-Wall. But yeah, I mean, I think they're in a really good spot because they could go a lot of different directions. Kid Gilchrist would also, you know, be really good for them.
Lob Village in Washington, not quite Lob City.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I want to give a shout-out to a team, not just because I live out in San Francisco now, but the Golden State Warriors, soon to be the San Francisco Warriors. I guess they're going to move back across the bay, which financially is the correct move.
I didn't even hear about that.
Yeah, I guess in a couple of years, I think maybe 20 – it's a while because they still have to build a stadium. I think I want to say 2017. But, yeah, that will be, you know, right on the waterfront, right by AT&T Park there. But – I think they have a chance. They made a bit of a controversial trade during last season, giving up Monte Ellis, who, you know, dynamic scorer, possible drain on your team, can't really play defense, and is a bit of a volume shooter. You know, if he's going to score 30, he's going to do it on 30 shots. But still very talented. For Andrew Bogut, the oft-injured center of the Bucks from Down Under, you know, they're at 7. They could potentially move up, but there's a lot of good players in this draft that we haven't talked about that are a little lower. They just all of them have some sort of question mark. Like Thomas Robinson, he's a great basketball player, maybe not, you know, as athletic as you'd want. Andre Drummond is like every year, you know, there's this huge center who they say, who could he be? And, you know, even the quote about him is Dwight Howard or Kwame Brown. And I, you know, it is a bit of a gamble. But, you know, I think for a team like Golden State, where you do have some talent, you got to take that gamble a little bit because you can't just keep making safe picks and stay in the middle of the NBA. It's a dangerous place to be, you know, like not one of the worst teams in the league, but one that's a little bit better than that because then you're never getting the benefit of a first pick. But there's some talent down there. And, you know, I think Golden State, if they can build a team a little more solidly, you know, that plays defense and that rebounds, that goes inside out a little bit, because David Lee is a pretty good power forward. I think they have a chance to make it run at a 8 seed in a couple years.
I love the David Lee signing when they first did it. And speaking of what you were talking about, of those NBA teams that are kind of in the middle, of course, our beloved Hawks are kind of in the upper echelon of all the mediocre teams in the NBA. And one of the, again, as I said earlier, one of the mock drafts I was looking at saw us getting Fab Melo, the 23rd overall pick, the 7-footer out of Brazil. I was going to see what your thoughts were on that.
Well, you know, in my heart, I want to be like, pick an exciting player, but I think that might be the right thing to do. I mean, it goes against what I just said, but The Hawks are in a place with the contract that we gave Joe Johnson, with the amount of time he's still under contract. Not to say that we can't contend, but, you know, we certainly don't want to rebuild by any means. And I think Melo, you know, can be a dominant defensive player in the NBA. I think he has that potential. I saw him in college, and college guys are much smaller, but he just ate people up. You know, he didn't just block the ball. He just ate people's face. And, you know, it is important to be wide as well as tall, and that he takes up the whole lane. And obviously you can't sit in the lane in the NBA like you can in Syracuse's brilliant college defense. But, you know, if he's taking up space, and assuming we still have Jay Smoove in the fold, it, you know, frees him up to be a little bit more of a weak side Serge Ibaka type defender rather than having it always, you know, take on the biggest, not that he always takes on the biggest threat, but a lot of the time he's asked to take on prolific download scorers.
Right, and you could even move Josh and shift Al Horford over to a power forward. I know that's kind of helpful thinking of Fab Melo just immediately stepping into a starting center role. But
right.
Cool. Well, how about we move on to something that we're both a little bit obsessed with and maybe talk a little Major League Baseball.
Let's play ball!
Let's play!
Sound like the old ornery umpire right there. Maybe not so excited. Well, I was pretty excited, I guess. So we have some quick hits just from today. They happen to be a lot of the our favorite big market teams. The Yankees suffered a pair of blows in the last few days. Sabathia was sent down. Only going to miss two starts, though, which is lucky because he's on my fantasy team.
I figure CC Sabathia is not ever going to be hurt for too long.
Yeah, he strained his groin, which no doubt supports a lot of weight.
That's a mighty groin. It's a mighty groin.
That groin has been tested before, and it has been measured, and it has been found up to the task. So he's only going to miss two starts. But Andy Pettit, you know, who's making a comeback this year, who's been pitching really, really well, was a huge pickup for the Yankees after Michael Pineda, you know, who was expected to step in as the number two or three starter, went down for the year. Pettit got hit by a comeback liner, and he's going to be out about 6 or 8 weeks. So that's too bad.
That's a big loss for the Yankees, who surprisingly have a very good team ERA this year.
It is a big loss, and everything that I've read says they're just going to try and, you know, they're not going to try to make a trade. They're going to try and fill the spots with guys from the minors and Freddy Garcia. So that should be an adventure, although he did well last year. So a couple other things. I'm not even going to talk about this very much. Chase Utley's back somehow after his many magical, mystical injuries. But sadly, I think too late to save Philly's season. Maybe he can make himself some valuable trade bait. That could happen. The Blue Jays signed Jamie Moyer. What the F?
Wow. What dude's going to be pitching until he's 69 years old.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
269. He started the year with the Rockies, which, you know, it's a tough place to make a comeback, but you figure Moyer, they can't hit the ball very far anyway because he's only throwing it about 65. You know, and he actually
trying to revive a career at Coors Field is like trying to overcome a crack addiction in Fourth Ward in Atlanta. It's just not the best idea.
That is an apt analogy, and I'm going to
thank you, sir.
Apt analogy button of the week.
Apt analogy button of the week.
Okay, that was good.
That was the best.
And one more little item, Omar Vizquel, who I'm just going to give a little love to because he is the fucking man. He's going to retire at the end of this year. He's been on the Blue Jays this year as a utility guy, which has been great, and I'm sure they need him. And he was just – he's the guy I remember. I was – you know, when I was little, played shortstop. I had to move over to third because Travis's dad was the coach in high school. But he was just – I mean, I was too young to see Ozzie Smith play, but Vizquel was the standard in Major League Baseball at the shortstop position. And just so classy, so smooth, just looked like he was born to play baseball and turned himself into a pretty solid hitter, too. Played an incredibly long career. You know, I'll look it up, but I bet he had over 10 gold gloves. I don't think that's even much of a stretch to say that.
No, the dude was a beast in the field for a long, long time. I remember watching him growing up, too. And, I mean, he was always an elite defensive player, and he could rake for a number of years. Now he's just a great utility guy, or was.
Yeah, 11.
You think Omar Vizquel makes the Hall of Fame?
That's a good question. That's a very good question because I don't know. 9 consecutive Gold Gloves. Usually, when you have that level of dominance in any one skill, that would be enough. But fielding is, you know, notoriously underrated, and his offensive numbers are pretty average. You know, there's the sheer longevity, the fact that he played 24 years. And was still at least serviceable. But that's hard because I would like to. Maybe if defensive stats become a little more in the mainstream, people will understand how great he really was.
Maybe they'll give Andrew Jones a little bit of more of a shot, too.
Sure. Do that. Now it's time for a little segment that I like to call the Fantasy Pickup of the Week.
Of the week.
Ooh, those were the Foul Territory girls. Sounded like one girl, but they were all in unison. So give them a little shout out.
Bring them in here to make sandwiches and look up stats.
Yeah, and sometimes wraps because we're healthy too. But sandwiches are more fun typically.
Well, you might be dieting, but your boy is carbo loading because I like to bulk on mass.
Tag on pounds. Well, you got to do it.
I'm going to be 5'10", 330 by the end of the week. Count it.
That's like the players I used to create in Madden. I would do them as short as they could go and as heavy as possible.
And everyone else would just bounce off.
That's great. Great.
Pick up of the week. I'm going to give you one offensive player, and I'm going to give you a pitcher. My offensive player is young J.D. Martinez for Houston. He's still available in most leagues because he's young, and he's had a really up-and-down year. But the kid is very talented. Houston's lineup is better than a lot of people thought it would be. Still not the best lineup necessarily, but they're making some power moves. Houston progressing a little bit faster than I thought they would. Still not the best team. But regardless, he is materializing into a good player, and he's had top 20 power numbers over the past week. My pitcher is Tom Wilhanson. I assume that it is pronounced that way. He's a reliever for the Mariners, and he's about to take over closer duties, and the dude has been lights out all year, shutting shit down till the AM. So what do you got for me?
And it really is till the AM because he plays out in Seattle, so you know by the time he's usually finished closing, it's probably AM where you are.
That's true.
That's what we like to call a segue, boys and girls. I also have a pitch thrower and a bat swinger for you. The pitcher is young Chris Archer, who prospect heads might know a little bit about. He's a Rays prospect. He got called up a little while ago. He already made one start in the majors, a start that he lost, only giving him 3 runs, though, so it was a solid debut. And it looks like he's going to be slotting into the rotation for a little while now. It appears that Jeremy Hellickson is going to miss some time. So, you know, the Rays play great defense behind him. He's got a nice minor league track record so far. And the Rays usually know what they're doing when they're promoting pitchers. So I'm going to go ahead and give that nod. Obviously, with the caveat that he's going to face some tough teams. But I believe in Chris Archer. My second guy is a guy that certain Bay Area fans will know all too well, but most other people will know nothing about. He is a catching prospect turned major leaguer now by the name of Derek Norris. He actually came across to Oakland from the Nationals in the Gio Gonzalez trade, and he was expected to, I think, need more time in the minors, but he's already up, and he's already hit a walk-off home run to win a game against the Giants, the Cross Bay rival. So Derek Norris has made a splash.
Rocking it in Cali.
Yeah, and the catcher position is pretty bad. He's got serious power, and he's not starting right now, but he's going to get some PT, and Kurt Suzuki is a very likely trade target, the starting catcher of the A's, because he makes more than $4 million. And so you could easily see Derek Norris skip the lion's share of the second half PT. I'm going to go out there and say that he hits 14 home runs in the second half. So why don't you pick him up?
Wow, that would be a huge pickup if you can get 14 home runs for the playoff stretch.
Yeah. So we are at June 27th, and it's almost America's birthday.
Ace, I'm going to cut you off right now.
Do it.
First episode, I'm going to make you pick your World Series winner on the spot. Go.
Angels.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm holding you to that no matter what you say.
I couldn't pick the Rangers. That's too easy. They're too fucking good. I picked the Angels. I'm not going to explain it, but I'm just going to pick it.
You don't have to explain it, and I'm not going to do it. But keep talking what you're talking about.
Yeah. So with it being the middle of the season, we're getting to the famous Midsummer Classic, which isn't really a classic because it's not actually that cool. I like the All-Star Game. The All-Star Game. I gave it away. And what goes along with the All-Star Game is All-Star voting. No doubt if you've been to MLB.com or a Major League Stadium in recent weeks, you have voted. If you haven't, then you've been ignoring the most ardent advertising campaign in the history of the universe, because little surprise for you, Major League Baseball wants the fans involved. They are desperate. And to do that, they have given the fans the fucking reins to the buggy. And yes, that's an Amish-oriented joke. You can deal with it. What Major League Baseball has done, and I mean, this has been going on for a little while now, but the fans pick the starters for the All-Star game. Not the pitchers, but all the position players. And that's through a combination of the stadium voting and the voting that people do at home on their computer, whereby you can vote up to 25 times on each email address. I have some problems with this system. But first, let me explain a little bit how the whole thing goes so you just have an idea of it. Rosters are now at 34. So there are 34 All-Stars in each league. As you know, they now have the rule where there has to be at least one from every team, you know, because every kid now gets a trophy, even if you lose. So the fans select the 8 NL starters and the 9 AL, which obviously includes the designated hitter. Big Poppy, wow, just a moment for him. I thought he was dead in the water like 2 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into it. He has completely revived his career. I thought his knees were shot. I thought his career was shot. He was getting kind of up there. All of a sudden, he's just carrying the Red Sox offense. It doesn't have as many recognizable names as it has in the past, but he is just back to the Poppy of old, just raking.
Yeah, he is. I mean, because of the DH position, no doubt, but good for him. So the fans have, you know, select the starters. Then the players, coaches, and managers vote, and they pick 8 pitchers for each league, and then the backups at every position. Then the manager who's managing the team selects the remaining players, and then there's this final vote thing where the fans can vote one final player in. But then after that, anybody who's injured, or if you decline, which, you know, hopefully you wouldn't do unless you were actually hurt, then they say, okay, well, you're still an All-Star, but we have to add somebody else to the team. So they get added. Then they have this new rule where if you pitch the Sunday before the All-Star game, you also can't play in the All-Star game, and you also get replaced.
It's a convoluted bureaucracy.
It is. And here's my problem with it. Last year, there were 44 American League All-Stars. That sounds like too many. I think we're cheapening it. Let's not cheapen it. Let's not take away when somebody says, oh, he's an 8-time All-Star. That should have meaning. But if it doesn't have meaning because people are just getting ushered in because we're trying to make the Pirates feel good, not this year, you know, in recent years, or we're trying to make the A's feel good, or
The Royals in any given year in the past 30 years.
Yeah, or we're caught
up. Royals fans that are listening.
Yeah, for real. Go cry your heart out about Melky Cabrera. That's not the phrase, but that's how it goes. Eat your heart out, Kansas City. So I have a problem with it just because I think, number one, the fans have too much say, which has been reflected in the fact that there's like 9 Rangers starting in the All-Star game, even though Mike Napoli is blowing it and hitting like .230. And who else is starting? Somebody else bad. Maybe Nelson Cruz. Not Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, another thing. I mean, just like all over the board, like the second overall first baseman in the American League with 1.5 million votes is Lance Berkman. And the dude has played probably 20 or 30 games this year. I should know. He's on my fantasy team. I mean, you look at Rafael Furcal getting the vote for the Cardinals. Rafael Furcal's having a great year. It's the best he's had in a while. But how can you not give it to Starlin Castro? He's just been having a crazy year in Chicago.
Yeah, agreed.
So, yeah, all over the board, it's weird. I always remember, I mean, Braves get more love than some teams, but overall we don't have a ton of people going through the turnstiles and voting. So I never really saw that many Braves represented unless they went above and beyond because all the big market guys would get it. And I know how frustrating that is. And really, I just think this all goes back to the stupid decision that Bud Selig made when he overreacted to that All-Star game that went into a tie. And now, as everyone knows, it determines the World Series. And you look at guys like, you know, I love Omar Infante, but when he got the nod, I guess two or three years ago, I mean, everyone was up in arms. And you know, as you said, maybe as much as I love Omar Infante, he probably didn't deserve to be an All-Star that year. He was pretty much a super sub. But the reason he got on the team and was labeled with All-Star status is because Charlie Manuel needed a guy who could come in and play any position in the case the game went 15 innings. So I think that what started as the Midsummer Classic has kind of devolved into this weird game that shouldn't mean anything, but it does.
It does, but I feel like it almost means less to the players because it's not sought after, and now there's all these injury cop-outs, and guys are like, well, I was selected. You know, I don't want to play. I feel like back in the day it was, you know, it was guys throwing at each other. It was Pete Rose spearing somebody in the All-Star game. It was, you know, people wanted to assert themselves. Now, I don't know if it's because all these guys are multimillionaires and they kind of, you know, there's not as much of the chase unless it's really obvious, like they're in the playoff race or something. But, yeah, there's not as much of a feeling of players trying to prove that they're the man, you know, like I am the best first baseman in the National League or whatever the title may be, which I wonder who that is. But, yeah, I agree. It has been a little cheapened. And, yeah, it's I don't know. It's a little sad. But, yeah, I just got to get back to this. There were 20 All-Star pitchers from the AL last year. That's crazy. Well, in the interest of convincing everyone that we are – well, first let me go to one fan question because this has been asked, and we have a little chat room going on. So if you guys are listening on Blog Talk Radio, feel free to chat with us.
And, guys, that shit is blowing up, and if y'all don't get on there, you're going to miss out on some awesome conversation. So check it out.
That's totally true. Durs might miss out because he never gets on that shit.
That's right.
So we have a question from one AJ Janecek. I believe it's Janecek. So his question is, tell me a team that is currently in first place which won't make the playoffs. AJ.
A team right now that is in first place that won't make the playoffs.
So who's in first place? We have the Nationals. We have the Giants and Dodgers now are in a tie for first. I assume the Reds are still leading Central. And then we have, I guess, the Yankees.
The White Sox are actually leading the Central, and the Rangers are leading the West.
There you go. That's an interesting question. I'm going to say the Washington Nationals.
That won't make the playoffs at all?
I'm not going to drink the Kool-Aid. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Here's why. Gio Gonzalez is not this good. I know it. I just know it. He's not this good. He's led the league in walks the last 2 years. And he's been pitching. He's been one of the best pitchers in the National League this entire year. Steven Strasburg is on an innings limit. Maybe they'll back off of this. Maybe they will. The Nationals notoriously stick to these types of things, and there's such a paranoia in baseball right now about that. You know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as the year comes to a close and they're still in the hunt. I mean, they'll be in the hunt, no doubt, especially with the added wild card. But, yeah, I think the Nationals, I think they're toast.
I think one thing that'll be really interesting with the Nationals is what they'll do with Steven Strasburg when they get to the stretch run, because they said they're going to limit his innings. But if you're looking at the first division title in a long time, it's going to be hard to justify that to your fans.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you think they could skip some starts now, stretch those innings out a little bit. You know, I mean, it obviously, you don't want to pull a guy out in the fifth if he's dominating. That doesn't seem like it'd be good for his development at all. So, I mean, the only way I could see doing it is if they skipped a couple starts now and again. But, you know, a win now is just as important as a win later. But if you're right, if it gets to the point, and this added wild card also does that, the intended effect of making the division championship much more important, you're right, it could do that. And they, you know, they might decide to stretch them out a little bit.
I guess the team that I'll go with is the Chicago White Sox. I am aware that they're the only team in the AL Central that has a positive run differential, and I know that that's an important stat. But the way that I look at it, the Tigers aren't going to be this bad for this long. The Tigers are going to turn it around. They're 6-4 in their last 10. And if you look at the rest of the American League, I think you're right about the Angels. I think that they're an incredibly strong team. And then the Rangers, and then the Tigers, that's 3. The Yankees, that's 4. And I think that there's going to be one team that makes it out of the AL East. So I don't think there's room for the Chicago White Sox.
Two teams.
I would love to see the Orioles take that wild card spot, but it's looking more and more like as the Red Sox get hot, it might be them and the Rays down the stretch.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, it is 6:45, so let's move it along a little bit because we still do have our special guest to get to.
An expert NFL analyst.
An expert NFL analyst from the annals of the NFL. Real quick, we're going to do a little segment that will heretofore be called the Sabermetric Stat of the Week.
Stat of the Week.
Of the Week. So the one today, and we don't have a ton of time, so I'm going to try and take you through this. And Travis, I'm going to explain it to him, and then he is going to ask me a few questions about it that might illuminate some other things that you guys might be thinking. And we're going to try and do this every week so that our listeners will build up a bit of a sabermetric glossary. And ideally, in the future, when I refer to something like WOBA, you'll know what the fuck I'm talking about.
WOBA? So, what's that?
Here we go. All right. I'll start from the beginning. There's batting average, which is simply hits divided by at-bats. 300 is pretty darn good. 340 is incredible. 250, 260 is average. 280 is solid. We have on-base percentage, which is basically the same thing, except you add in walks to those hits. So guys with a lot of walks that don't necessarily have a great batting average might have a similar OBP to a guy that gets a lot of hits but doesn't walk very much. This was a big stat for the whole Moneyball Billy Bean thing. Then we also have slugging percentage, which adds up the total bases. So a total base, you get 4 for a home run, 3 for a triple, 2 for a double, 1 for a single. So imagine batting average, but each hit counted for what it was, depending on whether it was a single, a double, or a triple, which is why slugging percentages are so much higher. Because obviously you're going to have way more total bases than you will have hits, assuming you have plenty of extra base hits. So WOBA is hoping to kind of find a happy medium between a lot of those things. And what it does...
So instead of taking two different stats and arbitrarily combining them, you're just making up one stat that makes more sense?
That's what we're trying to do. A stat that people like to use is OPS, which is on-base percentage plus slugging percentage. But it turns out those aren't equal. On-base percentage is more important than slugging percentage, but when you just add them together, it's assuming they have the same importance. So WOBA attempts to consider all these things. It counts your walks. Basically, every time you get on base counts for a certain amount, and it depends year to year based on how the rest of the league is performing, which allows this stat to compare players across eras and across leagues because it accounts for advantages in the ballpark, advantages in opposing pitchers, and et cetera. So in a given year, a single might be worth 0.8, a double might be worth 1.2, a triple might be worth 1.8, and a home run might be worth 2.5. And so you're going to multiply all those things by the actual stats that were accumulated. And then you come up with what's called the weighted on-base average. And
so this would be a fun stat to use to compare people from like across different eras.
Yeah, you can actually do that. So if you look at the all-time leaderboard, it's no surprise that Babe Ruth is on top of it. But you can compare Babe Ruth to Barry Bonds. So Babe Ruth had a career 510 WOBA, which is absolutely ungodly.
That's a ridiculous number.
And Barry Bonds had a career 440, which is also ungodly, but even a little more impressive considering we all know how much Ruth dominated, but it's a way to compare Barry Bonds. So Barry Bonds and Joe DiMaggio have an equal WOBA, even though they had very different stats. Barry Bonds had a much higher on-base percentage, Joe DiMaggio a higher batting average, Barry Bonds had more power. So you see how this kind of finds a happy medium between all of them.
I do see that, Asa. Thank you.
Great. And one other thing I'd like to point out is the leaderboard for this year, in which none other than the best first baseman in baseball, yeah, I said it, the Canadian-born Joey Votto is dominating. He's got a 0.463 WOBA.
Good God.
which is pretty incredible. I looked up in years past, usually the highest every year is about .450, .460. Barry Bonds in some of his best years was at .460. But the thing is, Votto is doing it kind of quietly. He's only hit 14 home runs, which is still a lot, but 10 fewer than Josh Hamilton. He walks so much, though, and he's hitting.
It's impossible to get out.
Exactly. And that is kind of the sabermetric, the drum that they beat. Just don't make outs. And the most amazing thing about that leaderboard, I don't know if you have it up or not, Travis, but the number two man on that leaderboard, take a guess.
Then of all time or currently?
No, this year, WOBA.
Oh, second this year? I mean, I'd have to guess Josh Hamilton, I guess.
He's third. I'm going to give you some hints because it's really off the reservation. Catcher?
Carlos Ruiz.
Yep.
Carlos Ruiz is having a crazy year. Chooch is going nuts and carrying the Phillies to an under 500 record.
He's playing catcher too, and he's having an incredible year. He has a .428 WOBA, which is more than Josh Hamilton, more than Carlos Gonzalez, more than David Wright, more than Brian Braun, more than Carlos Beltran's 20 home runs and Adam Dunn's 24 home runs. So this really shows you the complete value of a player, because Ruiz has 10 home runs, and you know he's having a good year because he's hitting .360. But, you know, he walks too, which not a ton, but it's showing you that. And I think it's a very informative stat.
Nice. Well, I see that we have our NFL expert analyst on the line, so let's not keep him waiting any longer. Let's bring in Carson Phillips. Spots, I said, because, baby, it is football time. Talking about football things. All of the football stuff with your host, Carson Phillips.
That was beautiful.
Hello.
Welcome, Carson.
Hello, good evening. Carson. How you fellas doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Look, well, getting super, super into it.
Well, you know, it's only June, end of June, but you know football season is right around the corner. And I wanted to speak with you guys tonight just about some guys that I had on my radar this offseason. That's right, looking at the top five free agent signings / roster moves that you probably didn't know about. If you didn't know about, probably didn't pay too much attention to. We all know about the Randy Mosses, the Peyton Mannings, all hail Tim Tebow. We all know about that.
So these are some
top five
cut,
lesser known roster moves of the offseason, something to get you guys looking forward to the next season coming up in the NFL. So at number five, we have Dan Connor, the inside linebacker, making the move from the Carolina Panthers to the Dallas Cowboys. He's joining his former Penn State teammate, Sean Lee, on the inside of that 3-4 defense. I think it's a great move, personally. In college, Dan Connor wasn't that athletic of a guy. But looking at in the scheme of the 3-4 that the Cowboys have on the inside, I think he'll be a great run stopper. And being an Atlanta fan, Atlanta Falcons fan, you know, you guys know about Keith Brooking and the end of his career. He's replacing Keith Brooking in that spot. I personally think it's huge for the Dallas defense coming up, you know, this year. So anytime
you can drop
an aging Keith Brooking for a able replacement such as Dan Connor, definitely got to look at that. Look forward to him making some good moves this upcoming season.
Who else you got for us?
At number four, you guys will like this one. Old Asante Samuel making his way to the Atlanta Falcons.
Seventh
round pick. A lot of seventh round picks don't even get signed. So I think this is definitely a great pickup for the Atlanta Falcons. Deion Sanders was all about the pickup. He personally thinks that in order to be a Super Bowl team, you need to have, not just two corners, but three guys who can step in and cover. And when you look at the Falcons' playoff woes the past 2 years against the Giants and the Green Bay Packers, both losing in the first round, both teams that can spread the field. They have multiple wide receiver sets, three, four guys who can hurt you downfield. And the Falcons just weren't prepared for that both years. Chris Owen, a guy who I love, but he just can't cut it. When you put Asante Samuel on the field with two decent corners, we have Brent Grimes and Dunta, he really gives the Falcons a lot of options. And you can defend against those multiple wide-out sets and give the safeties more freedom to make plays in the run game and just to take some burn off of them. So I really like that pick coming in number four.
Is Samuel going to be
number
three, like a nickel guy?
A Georgia Tech boy by the name of Philip Wheeler, coming from the Indianapolis Colts, where he had 74 tackles last year, making his way to the Oakland Raiders. I think the Raiders are a team that's on the cusp this year.
Ready
to make moves defensively. Finished 28th in the league against the run. I think Philip Wheeler's a guy who can help them out both in the run game and the pass game. When you play linebacker in the cover two system that was employed back in Indy, they ask you to do a lot in coverage, a lot in the run game. You know, when you play the cover two, you only have 7 men in the box. So it means a lot for a linebacker to come from that situation, come into the Raiders to help them out both in run stopping and pass defense. I think that he's going to be a great pickup for them heading forward. He joins Aaron Curry and Ronaldo McClain, who I think is a beast personally, just hasn't quite yet reached his potential. So number two roster move of this offseason, I'm going to have to say, is my man Jeff Saturday, coming from Indy, once again going to the Green Bay Packers. This pickup I just can't say enough about. If you look at the stats, this year the Colts had an awful year. The past 3 years, the Colts have had a top 10 offense and have also ranked in the top 5 in quarterback sacks given up, averaging about 13 sacks given up, with a healthy Peyton Manning. You compare that to the Green Bay Packers, Super Bowl team, who want to make the next step to win multiple titles, to be a dynasty. Aaron Rodgers was sacked 41 times last year compared to 13 average for the Colts. And I make the connection this way. Both teams, very good offenses. You talk about the Peyton Manning Colts and Aaron Rodgers with the Green Bay Packers. When you add in a center who did as much as Jeff Saturday did for the Colts, making line calls, recognizing blitzes, recognizing schemes, you add that sort of veteran leadership to the Green Bay Packers, and all of a sudden they're a dangerous team. If you think about Aaron Rodgers and the success that he had this past year with being sacked 41 times, you cut that number in half. You can only imagine, the strides that he will make personally.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers
and,
is kind of the ball. Pretty intimidating.
To me, I think it's a great pickup. So I think he's definitely a good piece to taking the team to the next level, even if he only gives them a year, maybe 2 years.
Cool.
So the number one pickup of this offseason, Falcons fans are going to hate me for this, but I can't help it, but it's Curtis Lofton. Losing Curtis Lofton to the Saints. And I got 3 words for you guys. Timing. Curtis Lofton recorded 147 tackles last year for the Falcons, a tackling machine, held down the inside of that Falcons defense. And, Jonathan Vilma facing the consequences that he's facing. If I'm a Saints fan, I'm telling Goodell, give Vilma your worst, because we have Curtis Lofton coming in to fill in for him. He's more than able past defensive player, but also great in the run. Great run stopper, as you can tell by the 147 tackles this past year. But without a doubt, man, he knows how we play.
All right, we gotta wrap up. We're running out of time.
Guys play before. Familiar with the teams in NFC South, but overall, it's my number one offseason.
Well, listen, guys, it's been so nice that all of you have been here listening to us. I'm glad you could hear our NFL analyst. That was Carson Phillips Spots.
An unstoppable train of information.
He really is. Just had to mute him there. We're almost done here. Only have a few seconds left. you're still with us, thank you so much. We'll be on every Wednesday, same time, same place. The call-in number is there. We'd love to see more people call in next time. Happy birthday, Johnny Estrada.
Johnny Estrada, he's in the truth.
Always.
You
got a punch,
then crank back three times.
See you guys next time.
All right. You. All right, I'm ending episode.
All right.